So we're holding at the bottom of, we're holding near the bottom of Nomzayan phase. Okay, so we started discussion like this, that at the top of the Amud, the beginning of the Gemara, we mentioned Shmuel has said that suppose that a woman sits on the ground, checks the patch of ground, doesn't notice any blood on it, sits down, later on we find blood over there, then we say she's Toher, she's not Tomei, because the Pasuk says Viv Sara, that it has to be in order for her to be Tomei, there would have had to be a Hargosha, there would have to have been some kind of sensation that that accompanies the bleeding. So that's what we said. In other words, that it needs to be accompanied by Hargosha. There's a multi-way machlokes are showing him what exactly the Hargosha has to consist of. Does it mean that she actually feels her womb opening up? Does it mean that she feels like a tremor or something? Does it mean that she feels a sensation of liquid flowing? Whatever. You have different explanations among Rishonim and Achronim what exactly how Gosha is. But Shmuel had said that if a woman sits on the ground and then finds blood on it, then she's Torah because there was no how Gosha. So we asked from a bunch of different Mishnayos and Brises that seemed to imply that you don't need how Gosha for her to be Tomei. And he said each time there may have been Hargosha and she thought it was something else. She thought it was the Hargosha that accompanies urination, or the Hargosha that accompanies a bedikka, or that accompanies having relations with her husband. Then we mentioned, the last thing we mentioned was a braita that mentioned there's three cases of suffix. One is where we find blood on her skin, and then we say that she's Tomei Misuffix. Another one is where we find it on her clothing, and then we say she can be Tahor. And the third one we said is, that if she touched something or if she moved it, then we go according to the Roy. So we spent some time discussing what exactly the Braisa means. We said that we talked about first of all what it means going according to the Roy is we said that maybe what it means is if most of the time when she has a flow of blood, there's Hargosha, then even the minority of times when she doesn't, we can still assume there was a Hargosha and she just didn't notice it because most of the time she does. We said as far as the skin versus the clothing, we said there's two possibilities. Either we're talking about that the blood was found above her waistline, but there'd still be we find it above her waistline. So we could say that it depends. If she finds it on her skin, then it must have come from her herself, because if it came from, let's say, she was walking through the butcher's market or whatever, then you'd expect to find it on her clothing. That's if you find it below the waist. And if you find it above the waist, let's say she turned a somersault, or otherwise the upper part of her body was below. Same idea. In other words, depends whether you find it on her skin or on her clothing. Because if it was on her skin, if it was on her skin, then you have to expect it came from her, because otherwise it would have had to pass through her clothing. Okay, so that we understand the braisa that way. So we're holding now three lines from the bottom of Nomzayin of the base. Bottom line is, we said in the Braisa, we said if she finds the blood on her skin, regardless according to the two possibilities, whether it's above or below the waistline, whatever, we said if it's a suffix, whether she's Tomei or Tahor, we say she's Tomei. Now the point is, there was no Hargosha, and unlike in the previous cases, you can't say, well, there was a Hargosha involving urination or involving having relations or whatever. Here there's no such thing. She just found the blood. And yet we're saying she's Tomei, which seems to go against Shmuel, who says that you need Hargosha. But Oid Tnan, also we learned in our Mishnah, Roya Kesem al Basara, if she finds a stain of blood on her skin, Keneged Beis HaTurpa, if it's in a straight line with the Beis HaTurpa, with her private area, Tmeya, then she's Tomei again, Ba'afagat B'lai Hugisha, even though there's no Hargosha. So you see, you don't need a Hargosha. The answer is, Amr Rabbi Yemi Medifki, Moida Shmuel Shi Tmeya Medrabbanam. Shmuel will agree, says Rabbi Yirmiyahu Medifki, that she is Tomei Drabbanan, because maybe there was a Hargosha and she didn't notice it. So all this time, therefore, so we were assuming that Shmuel was saying that she's Tahor, meaning Daraisa and Drabbanan. Now we're saying Shmuel would make a distinction between Daraisa or Drabbanan. Rav Ashi says a different answer. The reason is why Shmuel is saying she's Tahor, it has nothing to do with Hargosha, but rather Shmuel, who the Omer Kerem Nechemya. Rav Ashi says that Shmuel is basing himself, he's following the opinion of Rav Nechemya, the Tznan, we learn in a Mishnah in the next parak, Rav Nechemya, Omer Kol Dover She'enim Akabal Tumah, Enim Akabal Ksamim. anything, any object which is not able to be mekabel truma, then also if you find a kesem on it, it's not considered significant. You have different explanations in Rishonim why that should be exactly, but that's the idea. According to Rav Nechemia, if you have, so for example, the ground is not able to be mekabel truma, therefore we don't care if there's blood on it. Therefore,
she's talking about her, not the ground, or not.
No,
the
but the fact is, we found the blood on the ground. So the fact that, by the same token, for example, we're going to learn the next parak. We're going to learn examples. If let's say she sat on a stone bench, for example, and stone is not a kabbalah
she is whatever the object.
Now, what we're saying, So what it is like this. Keep in mind, we're talking about tumas ksam. We don't know for a fact that this blood came from her. And there are actually two major ways of understanding the sugya over here. First of all, one thing is we have to ask. If that's what Shmuel is saying, then why did Shmuel mention the whole matter of Hagosha? If according to him, it's not really relevant whether there was Hagosha or not. It's just a matter of that is whether it's Dovim or Kabbal Truma. So there's two major explanations. One explanation is, in fact, Shmuel never gave that explanation. Shmuel just said that if she sat on the ground and later on we found blood, then she's taught her. Shmuel didn't say anything about Hagosha pro or con. The Gemara assumed that his reason was because of Hargosha. And now Rav Ashi is telling us it has nothing to do with Hargosha. It has to do with the din of Ksamim does not apply to things that are not Mekabel Truma. We say in that, you have to keep in mind, in general, when we find a Kesem, a number of Achronim point out, in general, when you find a Kesem, you could always say there's a Spek Sfeika. Or in many cases, you can say there's a Spek Sfeika. Number one, we don't know for a fact that it came from her or not. Even in this case, she checked the ground. Okay, maybe she didn't check so carefully. Maybe there was blood there and she didn't notice. And number two, even if we know that it came from her body, did it necessarily come from the uterus? As we've learned earlier in the Masechta, you could have blood that comes from other parts of her vaginal area. For example, from the aliyah, which we said over there is the bladder or the ovaries or whatever, however we explained it exactly. And that's not metameter. So you always have really a spek faker. The whole concept that we're metamei her because of a kesem is only drabanan, as we're going to learn later on. So therefore, according to that way of looking at it, then Shmuel may not have said anything about Hagosha at all. He is just saying that you find a kesem, then she's tougher, because it's not on a place that's not mekabel truma. The Gemara assumed at first that his reason was because there was no Hagosha, and therefore it asked all these questions. Now, according to that, we can say we don't need any of those answers. We can say that in those cases, maybe there was Hagosha, maybe not. Either way, unless the kesem on something that's not mekabel truma, then we still have to make her tamei. We still have to make her tummy regardless. The other way of looking at it is that Shmuel did actually mention that reason, and the point is Shmuel mentioned that about Hagosha, and the point is that Shmuel is saying that because on a deraisa level she's tummy only if there was Hagosha, therefore midrabanan were able to be nakel when it comes to cases when there was no Hagosha and we find it on the ground. Because it's not mekabel truma. In other words, the reason why the chachamim are able to be mekel in this case, where it's not something that's mekabel truma, is based on the fact that midaraisa you need hagosha. So there is a bit of a nafkamina between these reasons. What if we know for a fact the blood came from her? There's nothing else we could possibly attribute it to, but there was no hagosha. According to the first way of looking at it, we would say that it doesn't matter. It's on something that's not mekabel truma. Therefore. Therefore, it's still not mekame. Therefore, she's still tahor. According to the second way of looking at it, we would say that why do we say she's not tahor unless there's hagosha? Is because then it may not have come from her. But here, where we know for a fact that it came from her, and the only suffix is that it comes from the womb or did it come from someplace else, then we might not be able to tahor her. So it's an afternoon between those two explanations. Okay. Okay, so the Gemara says, Bishleim Rav Ashi. Okay, I can understand according to Rav Ashi's reason that the ground is not something that's mekabel truma. Therefore, Hainu Dekama, Kauka. Well, therefore, we can understand. That's why Shmuel specifically mentions the case where she sat on the ground, as opposed to, let's say, she sat on something else. That's the point. That precisely because of that, then he'd say she's not tummy. Elul Rav Yirmiya, but according to Rav Yirmiya, that Shmuel would agree that either way she's Tomei D'Rabbanan, my Iriya character, why does Shmuel bother mentioning she sat on the ground? I feel a glimmer nami. According to Rav Yirmiya's way of understanding it, wouldn't the same thing be true even if she sat on a cloth, let's say, which is Mekabel Truma? The same thing. You would say that she's Tohar on a D'Raisa level because no Hargosha, and D'Rabbanan, she's Tomei because there may have been a Hargosha and she didn't realize. The answer is, Rav Yirmiya would say that when Shmuel mentioned the case involving which he sat on the ground, it's one of these needless to say cases. Lying with Boya Gloomer, needless to say, if she sat on a cloth, Rabbi Yirmiyahu would say she's still not taught Tomei on a Daraisa level, Dula Nivda Chafu, because when you check a cloth, you may not check it so thoroughly. She may know, she may have checked, she may have, she thought she checked it, but she missed a stain that was somewhere on it. So therefore, the Ikalamemim Almond also. So therefore, you have good reason to assume maybe the blood came from someplace else. And therefore, you can't be Mekameh on a Daraisa level. Ella Afilu Kalka, but the point is, Rabbi Yirmiyahu would say that Shmuel was saying, even if we're talking about she sat on the ground, the Nivga Shafir, and after all, the ground, you are able to check thoroughly and see that there's no blood on it. The Ikalamem and the Gufa Asya, then we have a much stronger reason to say that the blood came from her body. Nevertheless, Shmuel would be saying to her, because there was no Hargasha. So those are two different ways of understanding.
Look, I mean, if the blood was next to a drop of water, a river or something like that, she crossed, who knows?
Well, I don't sound like
the Karka is not necessarily, you can check it.
Okay, but we're talking about she checked the Karka, she didn't find any blood. Nevertheless, the fact that there was no Hargosha means on a Daraisa level, we can't say necessarily the blood came from her. It may have come from her, it may not have. Yeah. Again, you still have the sex data of before.
You cannot say and that,
no, forget about Reb Nechemiah. Reb Nechemiah is something else. That was Reb Ashi.
Yeah, Reb Ashi,
Reb Ashi is saying it's a matter of being a Kabbal Truma or not. Again, you have the two ways that we're showing him understand this Gemara over here. Does it mean that we're saying ultimately you do need Hagosha and without it she's not Tomei on a Daraisa level? Or is it that we need, is it not so much that we need Hagosha, but we need to know for a fact that it came from her? As opposed to when it's on the ground, not necessarily do we know it came from her. But if, let's say, for example, she sat on something which is not Makabel Truma, and we did check it thoroughly, and we know for a fact there was no blood on it before, then according to these two different reasons, you would have an Nefkamina. According to the first reason, we would still say no Hargosha, so she's not Tomei on a Daraisa level. On the second one, we would still say, okay, but the fact of the matter is, we know for a fact it came from her. It's only a question whether it came from the uterus or from something else. That's only one suffix, and we would have to be in the family who even on a Daraisa level. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Ala Keva Val Rosh Gudla Tzmeya B'chol. We said in the Mishnah that if she finds the blood on her heel or on the tip of her toe, on the tip of her big toe, then she's Tomei, because it may have come from the uterus. So Bishlema Akeva, I can understand if she finds the blood on her heel over the Noga Barisamokim. It could conceivably touch that area. Sometimes a woman sits cross-legged in certain positions. She can have that her heel touches her private part. El Rosh Gudla, my timer, but what about the tip of her toe? That's never gonna touch the uterus. It's a big toe, yeah. So that's never gonna touch that. That's never gonna touch her private parts. V'chitema zimni nogaba keva. So you're gonna say maybe what we're concerned is that maybe she touched the heel of one foot with the big toe of the other foot. So maybe there was blood on her. Maybe in other words she sat cross-legged, the blood got on her heel directly from the vaginal area. Then she touched that heel with her toe, and therefore maybe the blood on her toe is from that. How could that be? Are we concerned about this kind of thing that blood may come from one place to another? We always just look at where it is right now. Do we consider a chazaka that blood might be transferred from one place to another, and therefore that there's a reason to consider her shisame? We don't do that. V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa. Suppose the woman has an injury someplace on her neck. In such a place, where later on she finds blood further down on her clothing. So if it's in a position where it could have come, where, for example, she might have leaned her head down, and therefore blood will have dripped from the wound on her neck onto the clothing, then tola, then she's able to assume that the blood that she finds on her clothing came from that, and therefore that it doesn't make her tummy. On the other hand, al ksefa, but suppose she has the sore on her shoulder, on her shoulder blade, let's say, she'eni yecholah liflois, so now you can't have that blood is going to come from that to the front of her clothing, eina tola, which you can't now attribute blood that she finds someplace on the front of her clothing to that, the ein oimrim shema b'yodin nefalasu v'heviyasu l'sham, we don't say, well, maybe she touched that area, maybe she touched the sore on her shoulder with her hand, and then and then put it on the front of your clothing. We don't do that. We always go according to wherever we find the Tumah. So that's the question. So Mela, the heel, I can understand, can touch the erva, but the toe can't possibly touch it. And we shouldn't say that maybe she transferred it from her heel to her toe, because we don't do that. Now, Tosfos asks the question, in the cases we're talking about, for example, a wound on her neck or her shoulder or whatever, that's we want to be total lakula. Here we're talking about to be machmer. Maybe there's a difference. Maybe we can say we're not machmer, we're not to be makel, but to be machmer. Okay. So Tosfos says, listen, the whole concept of chsamim is only dirabon. If we were to say that we can use the tolem and mokum lamokum to be machmer, then we would also have to, in some cases, say that we could use it to be makel. Because after all, it is common enough that a woman touches, let's say, the sore on her shoulder and then touches something else. The fact that we're saying that not even in that case we don't do that, then that shows that we don't hold machzik and lamokum at all. Okay. So again, the question is, so why is she telling me if there's blood on the tip of her big toe? Ella shiny rosh gudla. Rather, no. The reason is it's different when it comes to the tip of her big toe, the bahadi deposta, because as she's walking, over dimisrami, it may be directly under her erva. So as she's walking, a drop of blood may drip out of there and land directly on her big toe as she's walking, and she has her big toe directly under there. So therefore, it's not mimakim lamakim. So the question is, the loy machzikin and tumah mimakim lamakim. Okay, now let's ask the other way around. Are you telling me you don't assume that tumah could be from one place to another, which we said before, as far as her neck or her shoulder? We have an example to the contrary. Nimtes akishre esvayseha. We say if she finds blood on her knuckles, tmeya. Then she's tumim. If Nesha die, not stunny, it's saying. Because the hands are always busy, they're always moving about, and therefore there's a likelihood that she touched an area where there was blood. Now, my time, and now what do we mean? Why should she be tumim if there's blood on her knuckles? Lachora, if she's she's touching that area, let's say, to clean herself or whatever, the pastor, she doesn't use the back of her hand for that. It must be, she uses the front of her hand. Must be, lav mishum daminin, it must be that we're saying, bodka b'chad yada, she may have done a bedika using one hand, b'noga b'idich yada, and then she touched the one hand with the other. So we see we are machzik from a mokum mokum. The answer is no, that's not what it means. Shiny yada dekula abidid another. No, when it comes to her hand, when we say yadayim askaniyas pain, it means that the entire hand is askaniyas and may be used to touch things around the body. So it's not just the machshin was assuming she only uses the front of her, the palm of her hand. No, she can use also the back of her hand as well while she's doing a bedikah, and therefore the blood that we find on there may have come directly from the beis haturpa, and therefore we have to assume she's coming. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, al shoka v'al parkesan b'vifnim mechola, we said that if she finds the blood on her leg or on her feet, so it depends whether she finds it on the inner part or on the outer part. So we said if she finds it on the inner part, then she's tummy, because it may have come from the uterus, it may have come from her vaginal area, but if it's on the outside, then no. So we have to define the snim ad hecha. Up to what point is considered the inner part? Amri dvei Rav Yanai, so they said in the yeshiva, Rav Yanai, ad mokim chevek, until the place of the chevek. What is chevek? So Rashi starts by saying it's a suffix. It's a suffix what it means. But Rashi says, I think what it means is the ligament that attaches the upper leg to the lower leg. So meaning, in other words, if you feel around on your leg, you have a point on the back, you have a point right on the back of your knee, where you have a ligament that holds together the upper and lower parts of the leg. So Rashi says that he thinks that that's what chevek means. That's what chevek literally means, like to embrace. Because these are the gidim, you might want to put yourself on mute, Ellie, because we're hearing a lot of background noise there.
I want to call you back because I have a very bad connection. I'm calling you back. I have a very bad connection. Okay. I have to go off mute.
Yeah. Okay. So Rashi says that chevek comes from the word, the shurdash chevek. Okay, we still hear it though, so put yourself on mute if you don't mind. Thanks. Okay. So the word chevek, Rashi explains, would be the word chevek, the shurdash chevek, means to embrace. So it means the ligaments that embrace, that surround the joint, right? So that's Rashi explains that that's what it means. In other words, up to the point of the joint is considered the inner part. Beyond that is considered already the outer part. Tosfos brings a couple of other explanations. One is from the Oruch, that it means in those days they wore socks, kind of, or soft shoes or whatever, that had laces, and the point where you lace them up is called the chet. You have a certain point, a certain standard place on the leg where you were a certain on the circumference of the leg where they would, well, not so. In other words, the point is it'd be a certain place, or there'd be a certain place towards the front or towards the back of the leg, as the case may be, whatever, where you would normally lace them up. So that part would be called chevet. Then he brings another explanation also from the Aruch that it means like this. When you bend your leg, imagine you take your leg and you bend it at the knee. There's a certain part of the leg, and there's a certain part of the upper leg and the lower leg that are in contact with each other and are covered. That part is called the chevet. It's the Aruch's second explanation. Anything that's not covered is outside the makom chevet. So anyway, according to these various explanations, that's what it means. Okay. So up to the point of the chevet, we're saying is considered the inside. So now we have the question: makom chevet kilafnim kolachos. What about the actual place of the chevet itself? Let's say according to Rashi's explanation, if we mean the place of the ligament, so if you find it further in than the ligament, like here, then we say she's tummy. If you find it further out, she's tar. What if you find the blood on the actual place of the ligament? Well, what is it? We said up to the place of the chevet. So what is it? The makom chevet kilafnim kolachos. Is it considered like the inside or like the outside? So the Gemara says Toshma. We'll prove from a brisa, the Tanit of Ketinah, of Ketinah Torah a brisa, ad makom chevet, up to the place of the chevet asne kilafnim, and the place of the chevet itself is also considered like the inside. So there's your answer. If she finds the blood on the actual place of the chevet, according to any of these three explanations, then yes, it's considered like the inside, and she's still Tanit, because it may have dripped there from her vaginal area.
So either it means the ligament.
It means a certain place. The ligament. You have the ligaments that hold together. The
posterior spine.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. So either it means the ligament, or it means a certain place where they would lace up their socks or whatever, or it means the part of the leg that's covered, all of that is considered chevek. So if you find it on the actual place of the chevek, it's also considered kilasnim. It's also considered like the inside, and therefore she's tummy. Rav Chiya Breder of Ivya taught this same statement explicitly. He didn't start with the question, and then we need Rav Ketinah's Breda. He taught it to begin with. Ami Dvei Rav Yanneh, as they said in the Yeshiva Rav Yanneh, Ad Mochem Chevek L'Chevek Asmei Kilafnim, that up to the place of the Chevek, and the Chevek itself is considered the inside, and therefore she finds the blood on the place of the Chevek itself, and she is talking. So same thing, except we didn't need the question and answer to get you. Okay. Boy Rav Yirmiyah. Rav Yirmiyah now asks the question in this connection. What if she finds the blood to share, Mahu? What if she finds the blood in the form of a share? Rashi describes that it means like a share, whatever. It means a share, whatever, means a collar, like you have for an animal. So it means Rashi describes that she finds it she finds the blood like in a circle, like a brace, like the shape of a bracelet. So basically the question is, with this and the next couple that he's going to ask, these are not the usual way that you would expect to find blood that came from her vaginal area. You would find one drop, you'd find whatever, you'd find one big splash or whatever. You wouldn't find a bunch of drops in a circle. So therefore, once we find it in a circle, maybe that means it's not actually from there. It came from someplace else, right? And therefore she's not coming. Another question, Kashuro Mahu, what if she finds it in a straight line? And there you have a couple of possibilities. One is, the Tosfos Arosh says that one, actually the Tosfos and Tosfos Arosh says, it means she finds a bunch of drops in a circle. Not a circle, a straight line. Because if she found one long straight line, the Gemara is going to mention that soon, calls it Ritsua. So like this, there's a difference. In other words, here it says a bunch of drops in a straight line. The Tosfos Arosh brings from the Rashbam, who gives a different explanation, that Keshura would mean she finds the blood in a bunch of lines. Like this, if it came from the uterus, you would expect to find it in one line. Instead, she finds it a bunch of lines, one next to the other. So again, therefore, maybe it came from something else. Or tipin, Mahu. What if she finds it as a bunch of individual drops? Again, if it came from her uterus, you would expect it to come as one big thing, not a bunch of individual drops. There are some of the Rishonim who explain that specifically over here, tippin would mean like when they're in a certain pattern, like for example, in the shape of a segel, let's say. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, it's an unusual way to find it, and therefore not necessarily. Or the Reich of Yerecha Mahu. What if she finds it as one solid thing, but instead of being along the length of her leg, as would be usual, she finds it along the width of her leg? Along, so again, that's not, like, she finds it like this, let's say. So that's not a usual way to find it. Now, you do have later on Daphnim text, we're going to talk about where we have cases over there involving drops of blood. Do we say they combine together to make the minimum size of a grist that would be metamical? So what are the situations that we're dealing with over here? So you have several different explanations among the Rishonim, what exactly the difference is between that and these cases over here. One possibility is that here we're talking about where she found it on her skin, as opposed to later on we're talking about she found it on her clothing. The Rambam holds that this whole concept that we said is the minimum size of a gris, which we say later on we can attribute to a louse that she killed, the Rambam learns that only applies if she finds it on her clothing. If she found it on her skin, the Rambam learns that even less than that size would be tummy.
It would be not okay.
Because we can't attribute it to a louse when it's on her skin itself. That's how the Rambam learns. So according to him, the questions over here would be when she finds it on her actual skin. So even though the individual drops are less than a gris, and maybe even in totality they're less than a gris, nevertheless, we could still argue that she's on it. Because if it's on her skin, it's less likely that it came from a squashed bug. As opposed to when it's on her clothing, there's more of a reason we could say, as the Gemara is going to say,
during the day, maybe not, but not, she could have been...
Maybe, but even so, if it was on her skin, you wouldn't have, the louse wouldn't have been there, you find the louse there, for example, or whatever, you wouldn't just find a stain of blood there on her skin. So when it's on her skin, there's much...
She clapped her hand. On the mosquito, she would
maybe, but not necessarily. First of all, that kind of blood might be distinguishable from human blood. I don't know, but whatever. The point is that the point is that at least, in other words, learns that there's a difference between on her skin versus on her clothing. He learns the whole concept that we're makel with a stain up to the size of a grist, as we're going to talk about in a moment, days, only applies if it's on her clothing, not if it's on her skin. So according to him, the questions here would be if it's on her skin. There's a lot of different other explanations among the Rishonim. Among them are that maybe over here we are talking about both of them could be talking about her clothing. But there'd still be a difference whether does the total amount of them add up to a gris versus does it add up less. Or we say later on that maybe different drops don't add up to a grist, but still when you have them in a pattern like this, then maybe it's more likely that they came from different bugs or whatever. Anyway, we have like four different explanations among Rishonim what exactly is the case in the Gemara over here. Anyway, so Rabbi Yirmiyah has all these questions about if you find it in patterns like that. Toshma, al-Bathara, Sopak Tome, Sopak Tahar Tome. Well, we had the Braisa before that was quoted on the Zionim Abbeis. We said if she finds the blood on her skin and the suffix, whether it's tome or tar, we say tome. Now, why the long explanation? Why not just say al-basara tome? Al-basara my lab ki hai gavna. We say she found it on her skin. Doesn't mean like these kinds of things. She found it in a circle or a bunch of lines or whatever. And nevertheless, we're saying as long as there's a suffix that it could have come from her womb, then she's tome. The answer is not necessarily one. Not necessarily. Maybe the braisa before means that we're talking about she found it as one solid straight line going down her leg. Then we can say that, yeah, it's a suffix, whether it's from her uterus or not, so we say she's tummy. Not necessarily would the braisa be addressing these cases where she finds the dots in a circle or another dot in a straight line or across the ribs of her leg or what have you. Nevertheless, many of the Rishonim say that even though the Gemara has deflected that and said we can't prove that from the Braisa, nevertheless, we would still say that, nevertheless, we'd still be Mekameh or Misopic in these cases. So the fact is, maybe, okay, it's unusual, but look, these kinds of cases, well, Rasua obviously should tell me. What we're saying, even in the case, for example, a bunch of dots in a circle or a straight line or across the width or whatever, nevertheless, yeah. Again, according to the Rambam, when we find it on her skin, we're much more machmir than when we find it on her clothing. According to most other Rishonim, there's no difference, but nevertheless. Okay. So the Gemara tells the case.
That's below the waist, on the
So we said that if she finds it even on her skin, and it's in a place where it can't really have come from her uterus, for example, on the outside of her leg, beyond the chebek, then we said she's not sorry. We said also, so the smear we're talking about would be, for example, on the inside of her thigh, but the inside of her thigh, but horizontally rather than vertically. And in the case of the clothing, as you said in the mission, it depends whether we're talking about clothing that she's actually wearing or whether we're talking about something that she uses as a blanket. If she uses a blanket, we said in the Mishnah, she's told me regardless because it moves around while she's sleeping. Okay. So it's my fault case. There was once a woman who found blood on threads of the loom that she was setting up. So she had set up a loom. You know how a loom works, where you have a bunch of sheafy threads that are wound between two rollers, stretched across between the frames in the middle over there that are used to raise and lower the odd-numbered and even-numbered threads or whatever. So you have to set up first the sheafy threads, and then once they're all set up, and then you start weaving back and forth.
What's the loom exactly?
So the loom itself is the loom itself consists of, you have two rollers at the two ends.
Right.
You have a frame that the rollers are held together with, and you have in the middle, you have two frames with loops in them that are used to raise. What you do is you thread the sheafy threads through those frames, the odd-numbered ones through one frame, the even-numbered ones through the other. And then once you have all the threads set up in the loom, then you raise and lower the frames in turn, and then that makes a space between them through which you put the eighth thread. Anyway, the point is, this woman had set up a loom, and then she found blood on it. So the question is, did it come from her, and is she telling me or not? So she came to Rav Yanai to ask a shayla. Amar lo, so he says to her, Tezel v'tesi. What you should do is, he tells the people who are asking, whatever, let her redo it again. Let her do exactly the same thing that she did before and see whether at any point the place where the blood is now found comes out that it could have been between her legs, where, in other words, that she stepped over it. If yes, then like we said in the Mishnah, she would be tame, because we'd have to assume it came from her. If not, then not. So the question is, Baltanya ain't shown in the Taurus. We learned near the beginning of the Masechta that you don't repeat things when it comes to Taurus. We had a case over there where a person was putting out a talus, and they may or may not have brushed the sheretz while they were doing it. So Shimon Gamliel said over there, what you should do is put on the talus again and see if it brushes the sheretz, and then you'll know whether you did last time. The Chacham told him, ain't shown in the talus. So we hear, so what is he telling you to redo the same action and see whether, and then see whether, yeah, you don't do that. The answer is, Tiamrin, ain't shown in the kula. The answer is, we don't say to repeat it when it comes out that you're going to try to make a kula from it. You're saying maybe last time he didn't touch the sheretz, and now when he redoes it, you see he doesn't touch the sheretz with his talus, so therefore we can assume last time he didn't either, not necessarily, because people sometimes do things slightly differently. But lachumra, aber lachumra shonin, but over here, it's lachumra, she should repeat it. If we find it like this, we would assume that she was tar, because after all, it wasn't on her skin, it wasn't on her clothing, it was on something else. So to begin with, we start with the assumption that she is tahor. We want to see whether possibly she's tameh. So for that, we can do shonin. We can have her repeat the same actions and see if she happens to step over it at any point. And that'll tell us. And if yes, then we can assume that last time she may possibly have stepped over it also.
No.
What we're saying is that we would assume she's tahor. If when she redoes it, she doesn't step over it, fine. We can assume that we can keep the same assumption as before, and she remains taller. But if this second time she steps over it, then we have to assume the first time she may have also, and then now we have to be matamer her herself. Tosfos, by the way, at the top of the Amud points out that on the face of it, we said before that she's only tamer if you find a kesem on something which is makabel truma. These threads are not makabel truma; they're not an actual cloth yet. Tosfos says individual threads are not makabel truma. However, Tosfos says they are makabel truma of sarah. Nevertheless, though, Tosfos learns that the fact that it's able to be makabel truma of sarah is enough for us to say that
any truma.
For any truma, Tosfos learns, right?
But technically, if a mace touches a thread, nothing happens.
Nothing happens, necessarily, right?
Okay. So why in the Torah it would happen?
Because the Torah says, Be'etzarah, the Torah mentions that it can apply b'shtiya be'erim, to warp or woof threads.
Shtiya
be'erim. Shtiya be'erim are the individual threads that are used, that are set up in a loom and used for weaving. So you have let's say, a spool of thread that's used for it, or you have the individual threads that are set up in the shesi.
Yes.
That can be makabel tumah. That can be makabel tumah of tzaraas.
Okay.
Then we said in the Mishnah, hosa p'shata v'cholo, we said that in the case of the clothing, if the woman takes it off at night and uses it as a blanket, then she's tummy no matter where you find blood on it, because it moves around during the night, so it may have come to the Beit HaTurfah at some point or other. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a bright. So Amar Rav Elazar Rav Yossi, Dabar Zeh Horesi B'ir Romi L'Isser. I actually paskin on such a case in the city of Rome for Isser. A woman came to him with this kind of shayla. She had used a piece of clothing as a blanket, woke up in the morning, found a stain on it, and he told her that she's tummy. When I came to the Chachamim in the south of Eretz Yisrael, Omruli, they told me, Yopa Hiresa, you paskin correctly. You paskin well. We learned in Me'ila, we had a whole story over there about Shimon Yechoy and Abelazar Rav Yossi going to Rome to be Mevatel Gzeira against the Jewish people. So it could be that this is referring to that story, that while he was in Rome, he paskin on that.
Why do we have to mention Chachamim Shibidraim? What about the Chaim Shidi Yerushalayim?
This is already, if this is that same story, that first of all, the Dorim includes Yerushalayim as well, but second of all, this is after the Churban.
The Dorim includes Yerushalayim.
The Dorim, the south of Eretz Yisrael, includes Yerushalayim, sure. But, yeah, as opposed
to... Yerushalayim is in the middle of it.
Not really. No, it's more in the southern part. It's in the territory of Yehuda, as opposed to the Galil, which is the north. But, yeah, anyway. It could include Yerushalayim, although if this is that same story from the Gemara in Me'ila, then it took place about 80 years or so after the Churban. In that case, there's no Yidden, there's no Jews living in Yerushalayim at that point. But Dorim would be the other southern parts of Eretz Yisrael where there are Chachamim. With that said, by the way, there are some Achronim who say, based on various Gemaras, that there may have actually been a city in Eretz Yisrael itself called Roimi. No, called Roimi. And therefore, that Roimi over here does not necessarily mean Rome, Italy, but rather Roimi in the north of Eretz Yisrael. We learn in a brayta. Arucha shalav shachaluka shoktara. Suppose that a tall woman wears a shirt that usually belongs to a short woman. She didn't check it before she put it on. She didn't check to make sure there's no blood stains. Later on, after she wore it, she found a blood stain. Uktara shalav shachaluka shalaruka, or the other way around. A short woman wears a chaluk, wears a shirt that belongs to a tall woman. So we have to see if the blood stain that we find is low down enough on the garment that it could have been opposite or below the Beis HaTurfah of the tall woman, Shnei and Tmeis, then both of them are Tomei, because we don't know whether the tall woman, again, in the two cases, either the tall woman wore it first or second, as the case may be, but either way, we find it in a place where it could have come from her, or it could have come from the short woman, whose Beis HaTurfah is, you have less distance between the top of the garment and her Beis HaTurfah, so therefore, there's more of a chance. So it's an equal chance that it could have come from either one of them, therefore, they're both coming. The imlav, and if not, if when the tall woman puts it on, it's above her Beis HaTurfah, Aruka Saharuk Sarasneh. Then the tall woman is Tahar because it can't possibly have come from her, and the short woman is Tameh because it may have come from her. Okay. Tanya Idach. Then we learn in another Braisa. Bodka Chaluka. Suppose that a woman checks her shirt, Be'ishilatu Lachabata, and then she takes that shirt and lends it to another woman. And later on we find a blood stain on it. She tahora v'chaverta toilaba. She, the first woman, is tahor, but her friend can attribute the blood to her and say their friend can attribute the blood to her, so not necessarily does it come from the second woman. So what does that mean? Amar Rav Shesha is in Dinis, man. So Rav Shesha says that's actually only talking. This that we're saying she can attribute it to the first woman is only as far as the din of dinim mominis. Does she have to wash it before she returns it? Like this, you borrow something, you're expected to return it in as reasonable as much as possible in the same condition as you got it. So like this, when it comes to this, she can say, after all, you want to make me spend money to wash out this blood stain. But nowadays, not much money, sure, you throw it in the laundry with everything else. In the old days, of course, it costs. So therefore, So the second woman can say, okay, you say you checked it before you gave it to me. Did you really check it thoroughly? Maybe not. Maybe the stain was actually on it before. Therefore, you can't make me have to wash it out. So that's what it means. As far as the dinim of dinim mominus, you can't make her do that. By the way, it's interesting. One of the achronim, the Chalkas Yoyos, about 100 years ago, wrote a sefer called Kabbad Kashyasa. He has in it, I think, like 102 strong questions in Torah that he couldn't figure out answers to. One of them is over here. We have a concept. We know that whenever you lend something to somebody else, you have usually a shoyel is responsible for everything that happens there, we know, but he's potter from Mesa Machmas Malacha. If you have, let's say, you lend something to somebody else and it gets damaged in the normal course of using it, then you're potter because you can say, as the Gemara mentions in Bava Mathia. Yeah, as the Gemara mentions in Bava Mathia, you can say, let's say it was a cow and it died, you can say, listen, I didn't borrow a cow in order to keep it in my barn. I borrowed it in order to do work with it. So it died in the normal course of work. I didn't do anything wrong, so you can't make me pay for it. Why over here would we be talking about that only because of the suffix, whether there was this blood stain there to begin with? Did we say the second one doesn't have to wash it? Implying if we know for a fact it came from her, then she would. What happened to Mace Machmas Malacha? So a lot of different achronim.
If we suspect that she was for some reason involved in something that made her bleed, it's her problem.
So there's a lot of different answers. So there's a lot of different answers. One of them, indeed, is similar to that. If she knows that she's nida, then she has no business wearing it without permission, without asking the first woman. You know, I might be wearing it when I'm nida. Do I have permission to do that also? If not, then it can't be considered mace machmas malacha. So that is a variety of other reasons. Even if she's nida, fine, let her put on a tampon or something to avoid that blood should get on the clothing or whatever. You have a half a dozen different possible answers. Okay. Avala inyan tuma, but Rav Shesha says, when it comes to the question of tuma v'tara, he tahor of a chaver tachmeya. Then we would say the first woman is Tahar, and the second woman we would have to assume is Tahar.
The small one.
No, forget about tall and small. Here we're talking about just that you have two different women. You have one woman own this piece of clothing and lent it to somebody else. Doesn't matter. Let's say they're both the same. Because she checked it ahead of time, then we have to assume the second one. We have to assume, why do we find blood on it now? It must be that, in fact, the first one did check it carefully. So fine, as far as dinim mominus, hamos mechavela baraya, she'd need solid proof that she actually checked it thoroughly. But as far as when it comes to the dinim of tumah v'tahara, yes, we can say that maybe, in fact, the first one did check it thoroughly, especially, actually, Hagoyt Habas says on Amud Aleph, we're not just talking about that he brings from a different girsa, not just that she checked the clothing, but also that she checked herself. She knew for a fact before she lent it that she wasn't nida.
Because
there's two different girsa. The Gemara had said, Bodka Chaluka Vishalat Lachavitah, Hagoyt Habas adds, Sforim Acherim, because he has different Sforim, different other manuscripts that he found, that said, Asma Vachaluka. That's that she checked herself and the clothing.
So it's another gift, exactly.
The first one can assume that that she's Tahar and only the second one, and only the second one is, yeah, only the second one is Tahar. So the question is, Maishna Mehadatanya, why is it different than a case in a Braisa that we have later on? Shtei Noshim Shinas Asku B'Sipar Echad, two women who were working with, who were involved with one bird, let's say one of them shechted and the other one cleaned it or whatever, suppose that this bird is small enough, it only has a stella's size of blood. In other words, if you were to squeeze all the blood out of it onto a piece of cloth, fine, but you only have a stella. The nimsa kasela alzu or kasela alzu, later on, each one finds a stella's size stain of blood on her clothing, shtei and tmeis, then both of them are tummy. So we don't say that one of them could have come from the bird. So why over here are we saying that necessarily the first one is Tahar? Maybe she didn't check it thoroughly.
Saying both the time was one, it was from,
because obviously one has to come from her.
One has to come from
right.
Her.
Now Tosfos says. Now Tosfos asks the question: what's the comparison? Over there, in the first case we were talking about, the first one checked the shirt. And the second one now wore it. Over here, we're talking about two women who were both involved with the same bird. There's no reason to assume it came, but there's no reason to assume the blood came from one more than from the other. So Tosfos explains, actually, that we are talking about that one of them was working with the bird and then the other one. So So in other words, we're not talking about both of them were working with it simultaneously. We're talking about that one was working with it, and then later on, the second one started working. So had the first one come independent of the second one to a Rav to ask, the Rav would tell her, you're taller. Fine, there's only a cella. There's a cella of blood in it. You found a cella of a cella-sized stain on your clothing. It probably came from the bird. Only so.
Have to go to the Rav for that? Is that obvious?
No, it's not, because you still have to ask the Shaila. So the point is, if she asked, we would have said she saw her.
If she went on her own,
exactly. So, therefore, so in other words, the point is that it's a similar kind of thing, because you do have that once the first one asked the Shaila, then the second one would have to assume she's Tomei. So the Gemara is asking then why, and yet we're saying that we don't do that. We say both of them are Tomei. So why is it any different than the case of the clothing? Tosfos HaRosh says a little bit differently also. He says that even if we're talking about that they were working on it together, you can't possibly have they both started working with it in the same microphone. They started working with it a couple of seconds apart or something. So therefore, same idea. In other words, we would assume that the first one, the blood came from the bird, and the second one is dominated. So what's the difference? The answer is shiny husk and the icastella yaseda. The difference is precisely that, because you have an extra stella of blood, so why should you assume it came from one more than from the other? But over here, the fact of the matter is, you know that there's only enough blood to attribute to one of them. There's no reason to attribute to both of them. And the first one did check it, so therefore we should assume that she's actually checked it thoroughly and that it really doesn't come from her. Turn it up on him. We learn in a brisa. Suppose that a woman wears three pieces of clothing, three shirts, that one on top of the other, which she all previously checked them. And later on, she finds blood. If there's something that she can attribute the blood to, for example, as the bride is going to say, she walked through the butcher's market, then she can attribute the blood to that, even if she finds the blood stain only on the innermost garment. We don't say that in that case, it must be because how could it have come through the outer ones and then not stain them? We don't say that. One point is that we said before that if she finds it on her clothing, then we can't assume that if she finds it on her skin, for example, we can't assume that it came from the outside, because then it should have stained the clothing as well. The difference is because over there it's either her clothing or her bare skin. We don't assume that she exposes her skin while she's walking in the street. But here, where she's wearing multiple items of clothing, one on top of the other, yes, she may have folded up some of them and she still has the bottom one. And therefore, it's very possible for blood to get only on the bottom one without touching the other ones. Right. Ein yechola litlois, on the other hand, if there's nothing to attribute to, then ein atoyle vasila ba'elyon. Then she can't attribute it to anything else, even if she finds it only on the upper garment. What does that mean? Over b'shuk shel tabachim, if she walked through the butcher's market and there's blood flying all over the place, tola afilu b'tachim, then she can attribute the blood to that, even if she finds it only on the innermost garment.
Closer to the skin.
Loy over b'shuk shel tabachim, but if she did not pass through the butcher's market after elyon and the tola, then even if she finds the blood stain only on the outer garment, she can't assume it came from something else. She has to assume it came from her. She doesn't find it on the first two. Okay, maybe they were folded up at that point. Maybe they were folded up out of the way. So therefore, she's not right. Mishnah says, the tola b'chol davar sheyechola litlos. When we say, well, a woman has a stain of blood on her clothing, she's allowed to attribute it to anything that she could possibly attribute it to. Meaning, for example, shechta behema chayavoyf, suppose that she shechted a domestic or wild animal or a bird. Mind you, we learned at the beginning of Kolan about the question of whether women are allowed to shecht or not. Our Mishnah seems to be a proof that yes, but on the other hand, maybe it doesn't mean she shechted them herself. Maybe it means she brought them to the shechta.
They can shecht.
Yeah, technically they can, although we said that maybe it's not so simple because they're more delicate and they might more easily faint doing it, whatever, anyway. So let's say she shechted a domestic or wild animal or bird, or she was working with something that stains, or she's sitting next to people who are involved with those kinds of things, so it may have sprayed on her clothing. Another example, if she killed a louse, I raise a tolaba, then she can also attribute the blood to that, to the dead louse. Ad kamatola, up to what size stain could she attribute to a louse? Rav Chanina ben Antigna says, ad ki gris shall fall. Rav Chanina ben Antigna says, up to the size of a gris. A gris literally means a split bean, shall pool of beans. There's a certain size bean, you split it in half to make a flat surface, and that's considered the size of a gris. There's
big beans and
thin beans. Right, but there's a certain kind of bean. There's a certain kind of bean.
It's a round bean.
Actually, there's a Gemara, there's a Mishnah in Negoyim that talks about a similar thing that calls Greek Akilti, a Greek from a place called Cilicia, which is squarish. So the Pashas, we're talking about the same one. Most of the Rishonim, most if not all of the Rishonim and the Poskim explain that we're talking about the same size of a Greek. In Negoyim, the Gemara explains, that the Mishnah there explains, that it's the size of the area on the body where 6 by 6 hairs will grow. So you look, let's say, at your arm, you have the average density of hair over there on your arm, let's say. So the area where 6 hairs will grow, squared, that's the size of a grit, as far as Negoyim, and pretty much, as far as I know, all the posts can say the same thing. So what is the actual size? A lot of poskim achronim say that it's approximately the size of a penny, or a tiny bit larger than that. Some of the poskim say it's closer to the size of a dime. What the Alter Rebbe holds is a little bit uncertain also, because the Alter Rebbe mentions it in terms of a certain Russian coin, but the size of that, not a ruble, actually, he calls it a piatchik, like a five copper coin, but the size of that coin changed at different times, so it's not 100% clear what the Alter Rebbe means. But I think most Lubavitcher Poskim understand that the Alter Rebbe means a somewhat smaller size, like a bit smaller than a dime, whereas most other Poskim say it's closer to the size of a penny. Okay, anyway, so up until that point,
a penny
is bigger than a dime, sure. The apple, not much bigger, but it's a couple of millimeters. The apple, Pishalai Hoga, and Rav Chanan ben Antigna says, actually, it's not even like the Tanakhama says, only if she killed a louse. Even if she didn't kill one, she can still, a stain up to the size of a gris, she can attribute to a louse. By the way, the Achronim talk about the question, what about nowadays? Lice are very uncommon. Do we have that heter anymore? Nevertheless, they say, since the whole concept of Ksamim is Dirabanan, and we're saying that the Chachamim are Mekel up to a gris, then even nowadays, when we don't actually have lice around, nevertheless, we're allowed to attribute it.
You can have lice in the children's hair?
No, not necessarily body lice or whatever. Yeah, but, yeah. Anyway.
We still keep the gene,
exactly. Yeah. Also continues the mission of a Tola B'bna O'Baila. Another one, she can attribute the blood to her child or to her husband. If they have a wound that's bleeding and she finds blood on her clothing, she can assume it came from them. Im Yeshva Maka, another possibility, if she herself has a wound, even though it started healing, but it's able to be rubbed raw again, it's able to open up and bleed, then also she raises a toilet, and she can also attribute the blood that she finds in her clothing to that. The Mishnah tells a case, a woman came to Rav Akiva with a shayla because she found blood on her clothing. She says, I found a stain on my clothing, am I tummy or not? He says to her, did you maybe have a wound on you someplace? She says, yes, but it healed. So the pastor, the blood can't be from that. He says to her, still, maybe it could get rubbed or open again, reopened, and then blood can come out. And therefore, you're not taught. Omer Lohain. So she says, that's true. It's not completely healed yet. It only just started healing. But yeah. The Tira, Rabbi Kiva says she saw her. Ra Talmidim Stakhlin Zebedev. So Rabbi Kiva now sees the Talmidim looking at each other, like, what's going on over here? Omer Lohain. So he says to them, Ma Java Kosha Beinechem. Why do you find it so difficult to understand? Shaloi Omer Chachamim Hadaba Lahachmir Alalahakal. The Chachamim, when they said this concept of Kesem, they didn't say to be machmer, only to be makel. Meaning that obviously the whole matter of a kesem itself is a chumrah, because midaraisa we said you need to have gasha. But nevertheless, the chachamim still, because the whole thing is dirabanan, and therefore there are various kulas in it, including this whole concept that we can attribute it to other factors. Shenema, because after all, the prophet says, the isha titiya zava, the prophet says, when a woman has a flow, dam yia zava bivsara, blood is her flow in her flesh, meaning dam b'lei kesem. It only applies if she finds actual blood on that came out of her, not just a stain on her clothing, which might be from something else. By the way, before we had the... And therefore they're mekel. Yeah, actually, it's interesting that we had at the beginning of the Gemara, at the beginning of the Parak, we had Shmuel's drasha from the word bivsara, that there has to be hagasha. Here instead, Rabbi Akiva is learning from the word dom. We have a number of different mafoshim talk about why exactly do we need both drashas. Because one of them tells us that you need hagasha, For example, again, we mentioned the machlokas, whether it is that midaraisa, you must have hargosha, and even if we know the blood came from her, she's still not tummy unless there was hargosha on a midaraisa level. In that case, then we need a drosha for hargosha, and we also need something to say that we have to know that came from her.
Interesting, because from basar you could deduct hargosha, but from dam, not necessarily.
Well, it means that that's the actual blood, not just that we found the blood stain.
Yeah, even if it's actual blood, from the word dam, you cannot infer that there would be hargosha.
No, that's
close to the word.
Well, that's the point. In other words, that's why. That's the point. That's part of the reason why you need both drushas, right? I was looking to see what I could find about that real quick, but yeah, about an explanation why we need both drushas. So whatever. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Eicho noson tachas akar. Suppose you have the dicker cloth that she used before or after having relations that was under the pillow, the nymphs are all of dom, and then we find blood on it. So did it come from her or not? So it depends. Ogol tahor, if the blood stain is round, then she's tahor, because we can assume, again, it came from a dead bug. Moshul. Fine, it was under the pillow, but obviously the blood didn't...
The bottom part of the pillow.
Right, so therefore we can assume that a bug was killed with it. Moshul tomei, but if the blood stain is long, then it's tomei, because that's the type, that's the shape that you would have from wiping, because that's the bidika, involves wiping, so therefore you would expect to find a long stain.
But one second, if she didn't wipe herself with this pillow.
No, we're talking about this as an aid that she used for wiping herself.
Right.
Now we find a blood stain on it.
Right.
So now the question is, did the blood come from her or not? So if it's a round stain, then she's tahor. Now, after she did the bidika with it, she put it under the pillow.
Right.
Yeah. Then later on, she checked it and she found blood on it. Ogol tahor, if the blood stain is round, then she's tahor. Moshuk tahor, but if it's warm, then she's tahor, because that's the shape you would get from wiping. Divrei Rav Elazar ben Tzadik, that's what Rav Elazar ben Tzadik says. The Gemara is going to discuss at the very end of the paragraph whether the Chachamim disagree with Rav Elazar ben Tzadik.
This is the blood that's on the pillow or still
on the aid.
So what's the mention of the pillow?
Because it happens. She put it under the pillow, and later on she checked it.
What's the need for that?
The need for that is because then there's reason to assume that a bug may have been killed under the pillow. Like this, if she does the bidika, and right away she takes it, and she finds a blood stain on it, there's no way you can't attribute it to the lack.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the point. Okay. So more sorts of. This that we said in the mission, and that she's able to attribute the blood to other factors, tanena loha de tanena barn. We've learned in the Mishnah what we learned more explicitly in a Braita, which it actually explains elsewhere. It means we should know that Braita is reliable. The halacha is like it because it agrees with our Mishnah. With the Tanna Rabban, we learn in a Braita. Meister v'toler of Meir the killer. It happened once that a mayor, when a woman came in with a stain on her clothing, attributed it to killer, which is a paste that they a plaster that they use for the eyes, which is red. So he said the red is probably from that rather than blood. The Rebbe told of a strap shikma. Similarly, a woman came to Rebbe with a blood stain on her with a stain on her clothing, and Rebbe attributed it to sap from a shikma tree, which is also reddish.
Mm-hmm.
We said Oshi Yoshua. We said if the woman sat next to somebody who was working with things that stain or whatever, then we can assume it came from that. So Yoshua Ein, implying only if she sat there, only if she stayed there. Lo Yoshua Loi, but not if she didn't stay there. Again, Tanena Lahada Tananabanan. So thus we have briefly in our Mishnah what we say more explicitly in a Braisa, which again means Alocha is like that Braisa. Obra Beshuk Shal Tabachim. If a woman definitely walked through the marketplace of the butchers, Suffolk Nitez Aleha, Suffolk Nitez Aleha, and later on she finds a blood stain which we don't know whether it came from them or not, or did it come from her, then Tola, then she can attribute the blood stain to that. But Sophic, Avra, Sophic, like Avra, but if it's a Sophic, whether she walked through such a street in the first place, Tmeya, then she's Tommy. That's it. By saying Yoshua, the missionary implies she has to know for a fact she was around people that were working with these things. Like this one, it's a Sophic. Whether she walked through that street, then she can't attribute it to that. We said Hogamachalus. Another case in the missioner was, we said if she killed a louse, then she can attribute the blood to that. Again, Hoga Ein Loi Hoga Loi, implying only if she actually knows that she killed a bug, but otherwise not, she can't attribute the blood to that. Unlike Rav Chanina ben Antigna to say not. So, Masnissimani, Rav Shimon Gamliel. Who would our Mishnah be like? Who is the Tanakhama of our Mishnah? Is Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Tani, as we learn in a Braisa, Hoga Tola Loi Hoga Ein Tola, Div Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel says only if she actually knows that she killed a bug can she attribute the blood to that, otherwise not. No, either way, she can attribute the blood to that.
Whether she killed it or not.
Comments on that. L'dvorai ein keis, l'direi chaverei ein soi. Based on what I'm saying, there's no end to the matter, and there's no limit to the matter, and based on what my colleagues are saying, there's also no end to the matter. What does that mean? L'dvorai ein keis, according to me, that I'm saying that only if she killed a bug can she attribute blood to it, there's no end to it. She'ein l'cha ishash tahor l'baila. According to my way, you're never going to find a woman who's tahor to her husband. Because any bed inevitably has in it many drops of blood from lice. Again, in those days, they had body lice and bed lice and bed bugs and whatever were fairly common. Every bed inevitably has some bugs like that that get killed. If every time she finds a blood stain, she doesn't know that she killed a bug, she's going to have to say she's tummy, then she's never going to be tahor to her husband. On the other hand, he says, when it comes to what my colleagues are saying, there's also no end to the matter. They're saying that she can attribute the blood, whether she knows that she killed a bug or not. They didn't give a limit how large the blood stain can be. According to them, it sounds like any blood stain of any size can be attributed to this, so there's no end. You're not going to find, according to that, any woman who's not tahor to her husband. Because you won't find a single bed sheet that doesn't have a lot of blood stains on it, because inevitably, again, there are dead bugs over there. But according to the Chachamim that don't limit the size of the blood, then how could she ever be tummy to her husband? By the way, an interesting point.
Just give you a sentence.
Well,
the idea of the sentence.
I guess so, yeah. I suppose so, yeah. Well, you also have to remember they use straw for their mattresses, and straw probably had lots of bugs in it also.
Sud
means a sheet. Tosfos actually points out why in Reb Shimon Gamliel, when he's saying about my opinion that it would come out that she's always going to be tummy because every bed has blood stains, why there is he saying bed and he was saying bed sheet? Tosfos says because the first part is talking about even the man's bed. The man, because he doesn't have to check whether the blood is coming from him, he won't necessarily sleep with a sheet. But the point is he doesn't necessarily sleep with a sheet. He may sleep on the bare mattress or whatever. As opposed to the woman, because she has to check whether blood is coming, she's going to have a sheet on her bed. Therefore, that's why he uses a different expression. As far as why he uses case and soif, Marsha points out an interesting thing. The word case can also mean the beginning of something. Usually, case means the end, like with this coming week's parasha. By him, case is a fine woman, but sometimes it can also mean the beginning of something. So therefore, so he's saying, according to me, there's no beginning of it because even the tiniest amount of blood is going to make her tummy. And according to them, there's no end of it because even the largest amount of blood is not going to make her tummy. One of the Achronim, the Sidrei Tahara, also points out a cute verse on it. He says, we learned earlier in the Masechta, we said that when is Mashiach going to come? When all the neshamas that are in Shamayim have been used up, have been brought into body. So therefore, in other words, it's important that there should be able to be a period of Arabia between Jews in order to bring down neshamas. Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying, according to my way of saying it, if you say that even the smallest blood stain makes her tummy, unless she knows she killed a bug, there's never going to be a kest. There's never going to be a kest when Mashiach is going to come because neshamas are not going to be able to come in. Right. Okay. Anyway. So what happens? So Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying, my opinion and the Chachamim's opinion, neither one seems to work out. So it seems logical to accept Reb Chanina ben Antignus' opinion over my opinion and over their opinion. In other words, Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying that I learned from my Rebbeim this way, my colleagues learned from their Rebbeim this way, neither of them seems to make much sense. Reb Chanina ben Antignus' way seems to make much better sense. Shahaya Omer, he says, Ad kama hi tola, up until what size stain can she attribute to a bug, Ad gibris shalpul, until a split bean. Which, again, we said is the size of a dime or a penny or whatever. But the Devar of Anu Moedim, and Reb Shimon Gamliel says, we agree with what he says then. Okay. So the question is, Rabbanon da'ami tola ad kama? Okay, we have to ask. According to Rabbanon, who disagree with Reb Shimon Gamliel, and say that you can attribute to the, up to a bug, no matter what the size, but up to what point? I mean, you can't say if the whole thing is covered with blood, that it should all be from bugs. The answer is, Abanam nachmeitok tola b'pishvash. What it is the Chachamim would say, she can attribute it to more than just a louse. She can attribute it to a flea, a pishpash of a flea, which is a larger bug. The ad turmus, and in that case, she can attribute the blood to it when it's up to the size of a turmus, which is a larger size bean. So she's not just limited.
How bigger than a grape?
I don't know how much bigger. I think I don't know, actually, but whatever. It's larger. It's larger. And in fact, it does bring this in Shulchan Aruch, not in general. We don't agree with the Chachamim in general that she can attribute it to a flea. But if it's a place where fleas are common, then yes, she can attribute it to a flea up to the size of a turtle.
What a flea is, what do you mean by flea? I mean,
a flea, it's a type of bug.
A fly?
It's a flea, it's a type of bug. In fact, the Gemara is going to give us some details about it. Turn it up on, and we learn it a brighter. Pishbash zeh orka kerochle, this flea, this pishbash creature, it's a, or maybe it's not a flea, maybe it's more like a stink bug or something, because the Gemara is going to mention in a second that it has a very distinctive smell. Or whatever it is, some kind of creature. Orka kerochle, its length is equal to its width, in other words, it's like round or square or something. The tamay kerechai, it tastes like what it smells like. I was going to explain in a second what the relevance of these things is. Bris krusalai, and there's a covenant established with it. In other words, it's a known fact. Shekola molloi meriachai, that if you squash it between your fingers, you'll smell it. That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's a stink bug or something. Anyway, so why do we need to know these details? Okay, kerach boil in some. This was saying the length is equal to the width is relevant as far as the dinim of a kesem. So if you find a stain that's round or square, then you have reason to attribute it to a pishbash, as opposed to if it's longer in one dimension, then not necessarily does it come from pishbash. Timely kerachai, why is it relevant to know that it tastes like what it smells like? Le'inyin truma. That's relevant as far as the dinim of truma. The tnan, we learn in a Mishnah in trumas. Suppose that the Mishnah starts by talking about a case over there. Suppose that, let's say, a person is eating truma and he finds out in the middle that he's tomei or the truma is tomei. Does he have to spit it out, or can he swallow what's already in his mouth? Then the Mishnah continues. Suppose that, for example, he finds out that. Suppose that he finds out that you just became Tomei now, but you were Tomei beforehand, or the Truma was Tomei beforehand, or another case, let's say he finds out it's not Truma, but rather it's Tevel, or what's relevant to our Gemara, what if while he's eating the food, he tastes the taste of a pishbosh in it? A pishbosh, a flea, or a stink bug, or whatever, got mixed in with the food, and he tasted it in his mouth. So we say, if he tastes the taste of a pishbosh in his mouth while he's eating, hareza yifloi, then he should spit it out, meaning we're not worried in that case about, but it's truma, you're not supposed to waste truma food, because he's also not supposed to eat a bug. So Rashi explains, there's no chiddush if it's chulin, obviously you spit it out, but even if it's truma, and you have a mitzvah, not to waste truma, but in this case, because of the bug there, you have to spit it out.
Yeah, even if it's truma, you're not allowed to eat bugs.
That's true. That's the point the Mishnah is saying. Actually, you have some Mephoshim who say that maybe it's a little bit different. Maybe the vote, I mean, after all, once the bug has been chewed up with the food, because that's why you taste it, then it should be bottled for the food. Nevertheless, we're saying that you're not useless. He has to spit it out, but he could because you can't make him eat something disgusting like that. Anyway, whatever. That's a different explanation. Anyway, so what do you mean he tasted the taste of a bug there? Minoya, how he's supposed to know what a bug tastes like. He never ate one before. Therefore, taimei kerechai, that's why we have to say that the taste of it is like the smell of it. So once you can recognize the smell of a pishbush, then you can also recognize the taste. But you have to still ask, okay, how do you know what the smell of a pishbush is like? That's why we added the detail. Bris chrysaloi, that's why we added that there's a covenant, there's an established fact about a pishbush, that whenever you squash one, you'll smell it. So therefore, inevitably, in a person's life, they come across a pishbush and squash it and smell it. Therefore, that gets remembered in their brain, and then therefore, if they ever eat food that has a fish bush in it, then they'll immediately realize what it is, and they'll notice it. Okay. Amar Ravashi says, here's another din about something. Irshi yeshba chazirim, a city where there are pigs wandering around. In such a city, women do not have to be concerned about stains on their clothing because these pigs eat scuffed murder muffin, they eat all kinds of creepy, cruelty creatures, and therefore they're always flinging blood all over the place, and therefore the likelihood is that their blood on her clothing came from that. Amr of Nachmanis, Vahod Drukaris, Drukaris, whatever, this city of Drukaris, It's like a city where there are pigs, because even though there aren't actually pigs in the city, but there's other kinds of things that cause blood to be all over the place. Some of the Mekoshim say that it means, for example, like this, in most cities, they have specific defined areas where they shecht animals, but in this city, not necessarily. They would just shecht wherever. So anywhere you walk in the city, you could have blood flying around. Another possibility is that it means that there weren't pigs in the city itself, but they could wander in at any time from the surrounding areas. We said ad kamei tolo kolo. We said up until what size can she attribute it to a bug? So we said up to a gris. So the question is, what does that mean? Amar Rav Huna, ki gris ein a tolo pachas mik a gris tolo. Rav Huna says if she finds a stain, the actual size, the exact size of a gris, then she can't attribute it to a bug. Pachas mik a gris tolo. But if it's less than the size of a gris, then she can attribute it to a bug. Rav Chista said, no, kigris tola, even if it's the size of a gris, she can attribute it to a bug. Yosem kigris ben a tola, only if it's beyond that size can she not. So the Gemara says, lema ba'ad ba'ad b'chlal kumisavi. Do we have to say that Rav Huna and Rav Chista are arguing on a general question of when we say in halacha ad, when we say up to, is it inclusive or exclusive, which comes up in many different cases in halacha. So do we have to say that Rav Huna and Rav Chista are arguing on that general point? The answer is not necessarily. That's the question, actually. Do we say, do Rav Huna sava ad v'lay ad b'chlal, that Rav Huna says that when we say ad means exclusive, up to but not including, but Rav Chista sava ad v'ad b'chlal, whereas Rav Chista would be saying it means up to and including.
Beyond.
Yeah. But not beyond, but up to and including. So the size of a gris, yes, only more than the size of a gris, not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The answer is, Amalach Rav Huna, no, Rav Huna, the Gemara answers no, because Rav Huna could tell you, Ika ad v'ad b'chlal v'ika ad v'lay ad b'chlal. No, sometimes ad can be inclusive, sometimes it can be exclusive. V'hachu l'chumra, v'hachu l'chumra. In each case, you have to go l'chumra where it's applicable. Over here, to say ad v'lay ad b'chlal would be a chumra, saying the exact size of a gris she's already tame would be more of a chumra. Therefore, we would have to say that. But in other cases, where in other cases, you could have the other way around. Let's say you have, for example, forget about a gris. You have other cases, for example, where you have something large is oster or tome or whatever, the smaller, add up until a certain point. So then we say, add the law, add the file. In Hilchot Trefus, for example, Rashi mentions over here from something that we had in Eilat Trefus about, for example, cases where you have, let's say, a hole in the skull of an animal or different kinds of things like that, where when the hole is up to a certain size, then the animal's not trafe, and beyond that it is. So, yeah. So each case, Rav Huna would say, you always go the chumra. V'Rav Chista Amalach, Rav Chista would say, V'alma Eimalach L'chumra Aminan, L'kula L'Aminan. No, in general, true, we always go L'chumra. So why over here am I saying that Ad will go in L'kula, and even the size of a grist she's still tar? V'Hacha K'Rav Abahu. Here the reason would be based on what Rav Abahu says. D'Am Rav Abahu, Kol Shi'urah Chachamim L'Achmer, Chutz Mika Grist Shok Samim L'Hakel. Because Rav Abahu says, whenever the Chachamim give us a size of something, we're always machmir, we always say ad, or ad v'loy ad b'chal, whichever one results in a chumra, with the exception of a gris when it comes to a kesem, where we're makel. Ikat amulah lahoshmaita ba'afinansha.
Ad v'ad, meaning again.
Ad v'ad would mean up to and including. So in other words, if it was smaller than a gris, so let's take for example one explanation of the shitta of the Alter Rebbe that's the size of a dime. So we would say, let's say if it's smaller than that, it's tahor, larger, up to, even if it's the exact size of a dime, she's still tahor. Only if it's more than the size of a dime, let's say the size of a penny, then she'd be tahor. That would be Rav Chisda. Whereas Rav Huna would be saying that if it's below the size of a dime,
up to the size of a dime, and everything smaller than that,
right?
Not larger than that,
but not larger. And Rav Huna would say even the size of a dime itself would also be tummy, and everything larger than that also. Only if it's below that size would it be tummy. So Gemara says, "Ikka de amirul ha'af shmeita ba'afinamsha." You have some of the chachamim, some of the amiroyim, learned this discussion as an independent discussion. Like this, the original version of the discussion was that they were referring to our Mishnah when it said kigris, and the question was it ad ba'ad or ad b'loyad? The second version is that they were learning that Rav Huna and Rav Chisda were just saying it as an independent statement, not related to our Mishnah. Rav Huna on kigris, the yosim kigris. Rav Huna would say that if she's a stain the size of a gris, then it's like larger than a gris, and she's tummy. Reb Chisda, Mekigris, Kepachos, Mekigris. And Reb Chisda would say, like a gris is like less than an antitar. And the machlokes would be about adva adbechlal or adva aloy adbechlal in this particular case. Kidam yunim, like we said, where Rav Huna would say you're always machmir, and Rav Chisda would say there's an exception when it comes to chlamim. I have a contradiction. Who is the contradiction to? We'll say in a second after we learn the brayta. The brayta says hoyu aloy tipe damim lamasa v'tipe damim lamayla. Suppose that there are blood stains on her lamasa, which literally means below, and lamayla, which literally means above, toila be'elyan ad kigris. Then she can attribute the upper one up to a gris. Now, what does that mean? Rashi explains lamata and lamayla meaning in sign. Lamata means below the size of a gris. Lamayla means above the size of a gris. So we're saying if she has various blood stains on her clothing, some smaller, some larger, so she can attribute the larger ones to some other thing, to a bug or whatever, up to a gris. My life to gris milamata. Wouldn't that imply that if she finds the actual size of a gris, then it's considered like the one below it? In which case, that would be a question on Rav Huna. Because according to him, it should be coming. But the answer is like a gris milamila, not necessarily. He could say that it means like a gris is like anything above it, and therefore, in fact, should be coming. Now, that's how Rashi explains the question. Tosfos has a number of problems with that. One of them being, why are you using the words lamayla and lamata? You should use the words gadol and katan, big and small. Also, after all, I mean, in the Mishnah, we said ad to gris, and we have the discussion whether it means ad v'ad. How is the braisa any stronger than that? The braisa also just says lamayla and lamata. If we assume it means in size, then why is the braisa any stronger a question than the Mishnah? So Tosfos actually explains the question is the other way around. The question is actually on Rav Chisda. Tosfos learns that lamayla and lamata means, as we learned at the beginning of the parak, above or below the belt line. So therefore, what we're saying is that if she finds some blood stains below the belt line and others above it, so she can assume whatever it is that caused the blood stains on the top half of her body also caused the ones on the bottom. She can assume they all came from the same source. Once we have the ones above her belt line, we don't assume came from the base at Torpa, unless she did a somersault or something, then we can assume the ones below it as well. Because you can assume, once you can assume that some of them came from one place, you can assume the rest of them came from the same thing as well. However, though, the question still is, that the question would still be, how does the grist thing fit in that then? We're saying the ones on the bottom half of her body are up to a grist. We can attribute them to whatever caused the ones on the top half, implying that if not for that, then they'd be tame. But why? They're less than a grist. Or they're up to and including the size of a grist. So the question would be, the question is actually on Rav Chisda then. And the answer is that no, what we mean is, in other words, that when the ones are above her belt are up to the size of a gris. So, for example, so let's say, in other words, Teresa says, let's say the ones further up are two or three gris, and down to a gris, no smaller than a gris. Those obviously didn't come from the base atropa. Those must have come from something else. Then we can assume, so obviously they didn't come from a louse. Let's say the blood stains above her belt are much larger than a gris. Let's say there's a size of two or three gris. Let's say the one below her belt is the size of a gris. Ordinarily, we would have said it's the size of a gris or more, so it's tummy. However, in this case, because you have large blood stains above, then you can assume they all came from the same place. As opposed to, you can assume it came from the same place, from the same splashing of blood from a butcher shop or whatever. As opposed to, Tosfos explains, the Gemara would be saying, if the ones above her belt are only a gris or smaller, then you can't say that the bottom ones are tahor, because the upper one you can't assume came from a butcher shop or whatever. It may have come from a louse. There's no reason to assume there were lice up there as well as down there. Then there's more reason to say the bottom one is tahor. Okay, so according to Tosfos, the original question was on Rav Chisda rather than on Rav Huna as Rashi became. Okay. It's not. So now we have a discussion on this. Nimtzelech gris void. What happens if you do find a stain on her clothing larger than a gris? where the halacha after all is like a chisda, that only if it's larger than a gris, that she told me. So what if we find larger than a gris? But the oisei oid with sufa by ma'acholim. But in that area beyond the gris, you find an actual louse crushed in that part of the stain. So the question basically is, do we say in that case that you find a louse over there? So obviously then that part came from that louse, and the other part may have come from another louse that doesn't happen to be there or not. Rav Chanina Amar Tmei, Rav Yana Amar Tahara. So Rav Chanina says that in that case Rabbi Tamei, Rav Yana says Rabbi Tahara. Rav Chanina Amar Tmei, because Kitalia Bikagris, because you can only attribute to a louse up to a gris. Bikagris va'od lo'italia, but beyond the gris you can't. Rav Yana Amar Tahara, Rav Yana says she's Tahara because Hani Mili Hechad Lo'od Sofa by Ma'acholus. If you don't have a squashed louse over there, then sure, you can say beyond the gris it can't have come from a louse. But when you find a squashed louse in there, then obviously that extra thing comes from a louse, partially like a gris. So all you have left once you subtract that is a gris or less. Good, given to the Almatalia. And we always say you can attribute a gris to a louse. Therefore, so over here then Rav Yana would say that we can attribute it to that also.
So you take the blood.
So you take the blood from the squash louse and subtract it, and as long as what's left is less than a gris, then you're good.
Yeah.
Tosfos, by the way, on the previous Talmud points out that if she knows for a fact that she killed a lot of lice, then right. She can attribute it to her, no matter how much it is. So then, yeah. Okay. Boy, Rav Yumi asked a question in this connection. Suppose that a woman was involved with something that could produce a gris-sized stain. Let's say she was working with a little bit of blood or something. And now she finds later on a stain on her clothing, a little bit larger than a gris. So what's the deal? Tiboy Rav Chanina, Tiboy Rav Yana. And he says you can ask this question according to both Rav Chanina and Rav Yana in the previous machlokes. You can ask the question according to Rav Chanina, who was Machmir in the previous case, because you could say, Adkan, like Amar Rav Chanina, you know why Rav Chanina is saying that she's Tomei in that case, even though we found a squash louse, Ella Delaney Sasper, because after all, she wasn't specifically involved with anything that produces blood. So therefore, fine, you can subtract the louse, but you still have blood left. And he says, so you can't necessarily attribute to that. But he or she was involved with something that can produce a gris-sized stain, therefore talia, so she can attribute the blood to that. She can attribute a gris to that, and then she can attribute whatever's left to a louse, even though we don't find it, because normally we're able to attribute to lice. So, according to Rav Chanina, then even maybe it could be makel. Conversely, we can ask the question, even according to Rav Yana, who says in the previous case she's Tahar, because you find a squashed louse over there. So therefore he says the one gris can be attributed to that, and the rest can be attributed to a louse that we don't find over there. But when there's no actual squashed louse there, then maybe you can't be Tahar, even though she was involved with something that can produce a gris stain, because here you have large.
It doesn't have to be like a string. It can be a circle or something.
No, well, the circle means squashed.
Oh, it means squashed.
Squashed, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So over here, there's no squashed louse over there. So therefore, we can't define. We can up to a gris, we can attribute to a louse. But more than that, not. Also, up to a gris, we can attribute to the blood that she was working with, but only a gris. And here it's more than a gris.
Yeah.
So what do we say? So, the Gemara says, Toshma, Nis'afkeba Adam, we learn in a Braisa, that if a woman was involved with something red, let's say we had before, we had the example of eye paste or whatever that are red, yeah? Ein Tola Bashachar, she cannot then attribute, if she finds a black stain, she can't say, well, it came from that, because different colors. Gemuat Ein Tola Bemiruba. And if she was only involved with something that produces a little stain, then she can't attribute a large stain to it. So hey, she's dummy. So what do we mean? What's the scenario? Lavki Hayagavna. Aren't we talking about something like that? She was involved with something that can produce a stain maximum the size of a grist. She finds larger than a grist, and the Braisa is saying she can't attribute. So there's your answer. The answer is loy. Not necessarily. That's not what the Braisa means. Because we say, Kegundinus asked about the grist, but nimtala shnei grist in the oil. the brisa might mean, let's say that she was involved with something that can produce only a one gris size thing, let's say a very small bird, and then she finds two gris in plus. So even if we were to say that one whole gris comes from what she was involved with, and another whole gris comes from a louse, you're still left a little extra. So the question is, Yehoche Maila Memra, then in that case, why do we need to say it? What's the chiddush? Yeah. The answer is, you might have thought like this. You could say like this, fine. But the blood stain over here is, let's say, the size of 2.5 gris. You're assuming that what you have is you have, let's say, going from left to right. The leftmost part comes from the bird. The next part comes from Lacholos. And the next one, therefore, you have nothing else to attribute but to her. But maybe not. Maybe assume. Maybe say, Shkoyoki gris tipper, take the gris size stain that came from the bird, Shadi be misi, assume that it was in the middle, not on one side or the other. Then Zilhochalekos, the gris from the bird. Therefore, zil hachalekashiura, and then on each side of it, then you have less than a gris in size, because if you have, let's say you're starting with 2.5 gris in, if you assume that the one gris from the bird happens to be in the middle, then you have only 3/4 of a gris on each side, and then you could attribute those to life. So maybe you should say she's tahor, kamash malon.
3/4 of a gris is not a gris.
It's less than a gris, that's the point. That's less than a gris, so she should be tahor. Kamash malon, therefore the braisa needs to tell us that not. You don't assume that the blood from the bird may have ended up in the middle. You assume, say, it might have ended up on one side or the other. Therefore, even if you subtract that and then you subtract the next gris and assume it's from a louse, you're still left with more, and therefore she'd be telling. So we don't have a proof one way or the other from this braisa about this case over here of Rabbi Yirmiyah's, where she was involved, let's say, with a bird that can produce only a gris stain, and she finds a little larger than a gris. Is she tummy or not? You can't see one way or the other from the bright side. Okay. It's a suffix, so it's a suffix, so what do we say? So we don't know. The halacha is, because again, summon is only Rabbanon, so we are doing it. Omer Rava. So Rava says in this connection, Nimsa Leah Min Echod, if she found on her one type of stain, Toila by Kama Minin, then later on she can attribute many different kinds of stains to it. So Rashi explains, let's say, for example, she finds a stain that, because, as we said before, comes from eyeshadow or whatever, eye paste. Then she finds later on another stain. Even if it doesn't have the same color, she can assume it came from the same source. So the question is, how is that? We ask a question from the Brisa. We just said, Tosfos anyway has a different explanation. Tosfos says we don't mean it's different colors. Tosfos says that she found, let's say, that she found one of them above her belt line. She can assume all the other ones that are below the belt line came from a similar source. Once she's able to.
Different colors?
That's apparently what Robert is saying, because once we have the one above the belt line definitely did not come from the base aturpa, it definitely came from someplace else, then already the ones below the belt line, even though they're a different color, you could still... the question is, what do you mean? Basically,
what place is more important than color?
Yeah. So the question is, basically, the Gemara says we have a contradiction. You just said in a braisa, nis'ach v'odam ein tola b'shocher. We said if she was occupied with something red, then she can't attribute black to it. Then it was nis'ach v'shiny. Fine. It's one thing if we know for a fact that she was working with something red, then you can't have, let's say, a black stain would come from it. But if she wasn't actually working with such a thing, and we find on her a red stain and a black stain, then we can say, listen, the red stain, we don't know where it came from, but there's no particular reason to it. We can be toiler. We have reason to assume it came from something else. Let's say, again, when she walks through the butcher shop or whatever. So therefore, the black one also. So even though they're different colors, she can be toiler. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion goes like this. Omar Rava, nis'achkim, amin echad toiler by kalamini. The second version, only if she was actually working with one type of thing, can she then attribute many different colors to it. So then again, the question is, Mason is asked about other men and toilet by shocker. The answer is, Chika Omar Rava. Rava is talking about a specific case. He's asked about Tanagola. Suppose that she was working with a chicken. The Isva Kamamine Dama, a chicken has many different colors of blood that can come out of it.
No,
normally not. But again, the same way as you said before, you can have that blood can deteriorate or deoxygenate or whatever and be black. The same way, a chicken has various kinds of blood from different...
Oh, She was dealing with a chicken.
No, but the point is that the blood may have had, the chicken may have had some black blood in it to begin with. So therefore, we're saying that only in that case, and since, by the way, usually when we have two different versions of a statement in the Gemara, usually the halacha is like the second one, so it is over here also. Only if she was working with a chicken, then she can attribute different color stains. But in a regular case, let's say she finds a red stain and a black stain, and so one of them she can attribute to one source and the other one not, and then they're not. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Maisabish of Achula, we said there was a case where a woman came to the Rakiva with a Shaila, and he told her that she's Torah, because because she had a wound, which had partially healed, but it could still open up again. And he said, and Rabbi Akiva told the Talmud, and the Chachamim didn't say the matter to be Machmer, only to be Mekel. So he said, Maisabish of Achula. While Tanya, we learn a Braisa the other way around, like, Omach Chachamim, that's a double lahokker, Allah lahachmer. The Chachamim did not say the matter to be Mekel, but rather to be Machmer. And here in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva said it the other way around. So Ravina says what it means is like this. The whole concept of Ksamim is a chumrah over what it says in the Torah. Because again, in the Torah you would have to have, you know that the blood came from her, and or that there was Hagosha. So the whole concept that a Ketim should be Metameh, her is only Dirabanan, not the chumrah. Ksamim Achman Dirabanan, but in and of themselves they are Dirabanan, and therefore where we can be Mekel, then we're Mekel. So that's what, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva is saying, once we have the concept of Kesem, which is Dirabanan, within that we make or when we're able to attribute it to something else. But the whole concept that a Kesem is Metameh, or when there's nothing to attribute, that whole concept is indeed a Chumrah over the Din D'Oraisa. Because D'Oraisa would still say only if we never came from it. Mm-hmm.
So it's a Chumrah
over what it says in the Torah, because D'Oraisa there would have had to be Hargosha. Within that, once we have the takana of Ksamim, then the Chachamim are Mekel in various cases where she can attribute it to some external factors.
Takana of Ksamim meaning what is that?
This concept that if she finds a blood stain on her clothing, then she's Tomim, when we have reason to assume that it may have come from the Beis HaTorpa, that she's Tomim, that whole concept is the Rabbanon. Because again, otherwise we would have said it was Sfet Seker, the thought of whether it came from her, and even if it came from her, it didn't come from the uterus. There is, by the way, a very interesting opinion of the second Raivad. In Jewish history, you have three Raivans. You have the first the first one was named Rabbi Abraham ben David. He lived in Spain in the generation before the Rambam. His most famous sefer is called Seder HaKabbalah. He writes it's a sefer on Jewish history describing how exactly Torah was transmitted from one generation to the next down to his time. He wrote it basically against the Karoyim, who claimed that Torah Sheba'al Peh was invented by the Chachamim, so he uses it to prove that not. The second one was actually called Rabbi Abraham, but it's not his father's name wasn't David. He was called Raivad because he was Rabbi Abraham Av Beis Din. He was the Av Beis Din of Narbonne in southern France. Then you have the third one. He also lived in the time of the Rambam, or maybe slightly before him. Mm-hmm. The third one was his son-in-law, whose name was also Abraham ben David. That's the famous Raivad who always argues with the Rambam and also wrote on the Rif and several other stuff.
He was also in Provence.
There were two Raivads that were in Provence. One was
Narbonne.
Well, Narbonne is part of Provence. Right? Okay, maybe in modern terms it's not, but in Jewish terms it is. In Jewish terms, Provence is basically the whole southern France. Anyway, the point is that, so you have three rivals in Jewish history. The third one was the son-in-law of the second one. The third one, the one who argues with the Rambam, also among his other sforim, he wrote a sefer called Balei HaNefesh on the dinim of Taras Mishpasa. So he mentions in there a very interesting opinion from his father-in-law, the second rival, that this whole concept of Ksamim only applies when we have Truma and Kodshim. He learned the whole concept of Ksamim or Matamiya woman is only when there are Truma and Kodshim to deal with.
Which means it's not applicable nowadays.
The third Raivad strongly disagrees with that and says, so do most of the other Rishonim, and say, no, it is actually Negea nowadays as well.
So what's
the law? Yeah, that is. Okay, to continue. The Mishnah said, Eid Shehu Nosun. You said you have a case where there was a bedikah cloth that the woman had used before or after Tashmish, that was under the pillow. Later on, we find a blood stain on it. So Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik had said in the Mishnah, it depends whether the blood stain is round or long. If it's round, she's Tahar, and if it's long, that means it came from wiping, and she's Tahar. So we said Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik said that. So Yibayelu, we have a question. Do the other Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik on that or not? Toshma, Kesem Oruch Mitzvah. A Braisa says a long stain combines together, and therefore, as long as the total area of it is larger than a grit, then she's Tomei. Tippin, and Mitzvah. But if you have individual drops here and there, then they don't combine. That's what we mentioned before about when we had Rav Yirmiyah's question about different drops. They have several different ways that Rishonim understand how to reconcile that with our Gemara on the end. Okay. So the question is, Mani, which Tana is this bright the light? E Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik, if it's like Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik, Lomali Tziruch. Why does he say you need to combine it? Homa Moshul Kosher Utomei. On the face of it, Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik is saying, even if it's less than a grit, because it's long, it obviously didn't come from killing a bug, because it wouldn't be long then. It would be round. So according to him, you don't need a minimum size for it to be Tomei.
Unless you throw your finger.
No, come on. Elo lav Rabbanon. Obviously, therefore, this brisa must be according to Rabbanon. Shmamin of Pligi, which shows, therefore, that the Rabbanon disagrees with Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik. He would say that if it's long, it doesn't matter the minimum size, it's always Tomei, because it obviously came from Bedika. And the Chum would still say, you have to see whether it's the size of a gris. The answer is loy, not necessarily. La olam Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik. The brisa could, after all, be like Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik. The chi omer Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik the aid, because maybe Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik is specifically talking in our Mishnah about the case where it was a bedikah cloth, which is used for checking, and therefore inevitably she wipes it. Avol bekesem loy, but maybe a regular stain that you find on her garment, Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik would still say you need a minimum size of a grit. So no proof. In other words, maybe the brisa is saying when we say a long one mitzvah versus individual drop, it's talking about where you find it on a regular cloth, as opposed to an aid would be different. But note, however, Toshma, the Amr of Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, Halacha, Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that the Halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik. Halacha mikval the Pligi. The fact that he has to say that Halacha is like him involves that implies that there's a different opinion that disagrees with him. So that proves that the Chachamim must disagree with him. Shnamina, that proves it. Yes, the Chachamim do disagree with him. However, they would say that even if it's long, it still has to be the minimum size of a group. But the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik, that if it's on an aid, at least it doesn't matter the minimum size, because obviously it came from her, and anything else, then fine. They have to be the size of this. So therefore, Shmamina, that proves that the Chacham disagree with him. Nevertheless, the Yehuda is saying now in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is like. Because the halacha can be like because it's in our Mishnah without a dissenting opinion, so even though there's an implication that some disagree with him, the fact that Rebbe put an opinion in the Mishnah without a dissenting opinion shows that Allah can do that. That's fine, he proves there's a dissenting opinion, but nevertheless, Rebbe did not put that dissenting opinion in the Mishnah.
So that's stronger.
Yes, so therefore, that's it. Shmamina, that proves it. Especially because when we say the Chachamim doesn't always mean all the other Chachamim. It can mean one individual. Sometimes we say the Chachamim is one individual Tana. Just like we said in the Mishnah, that who are the Chachamim who disagree with Chachamim and Tana? Yes, we said Rav Shimon was Rav Shimon Gamliel. So the same way, yeah.
Okay.
So it could be one Chachamim. Okay. Adron Allah HaRoyah.